Fact. Joining us now is Professor Aris Arugay, a political science professor at the University of the Philippines. Good evening, Professor Arugay, and thank you for joining us again in the program. Happy New Year to you.
Good evening, Christian. Happy New Year, and thank you again for inviting me.
Okay, the official campaign period for national candidates will start next month in February for local. That would come after. But at this stage, let's talk about the idea of candidates running for president somehow solidifying their support base already, because there was a recent survey which showed that certain candidates already have a very solid support base. According to that survey, for instance, former Senator Bongbong Marcos Jr., among his followers, 49% said they would no longer change their minds. So what do you make of this?
Well, political campaigns, particularly elections, is now on the stage of making sure that the base is maintained. But when we say that they will likely vote and this base of Senator Marcos Jr., the key question remains is whether the base will actually cast their vote, because the surveys simply indicate voting preferences. But the seriousness of purpose of voters to actually translate their preferences to actually going to the ballot to the voting precinct, casting their ballot, is a totally different matter. So I think while surveys can gauge the so-called electoral base, one thing is that the base needs to go out and vote. And this is where the next stage of campaigning should focus on.
But normally, when you talk about the pre-election calendar, is it too early, or by this time there already is a solidification of support base when you talk about presidential candidates?
Well, I'm a bit curious about how solid the base is. Even if the survey did ask a question about that they're not going to change their minds. But the changing of the minds really depends on current information that is available. So if there's new information that will come out from the campaign, as I've said before, we still haven't seen the advent of negative campaigning as well as targeted campaigning to the other candidates by other candidates. So we say that this base of current candidates is only as strong because of the available information that they have. And voters continue to be bombarded with more information, with more campaigning, with more messages, more narratives, more ideas in the coming weeks and months. So the base is, I think, when you say you already have a solid base because they won't likely change their minds, that assumes that they won't get any new information in the coming weeks or months.
Okay, that's a very valid point. But there are also those who argue that at this stage, everything has been thrown at the direction of Marcos Jr. Na ilabas na lahat ng mga yung history na regarding their ill-gotten wealth, the fact that his father was a late dictator, etc., etc., yung billions na nilako ng pamilya, as shown by Supreme Court decisions. Parang ano pa raw ba ang pwede iba to kay Bongbong Marcos? Eh, hindi naman talaga bumawa by numbers. Again, based on surveys.
Right. That information is what we call negative information, meaning what will dissuade voters from not voting for a particular candidate. In this particular case, Senator Marcos Jr. However, voter disenchantment can also happen when the candidate is not able to put anything forward. It's not able to be, and given our electoral context, we're in at the height of the pandemic. I do think the circumstances currently compared to other electoral cycles is a bit different. So there might be pundits that will say that everything has been thrown, including the kitchen sink, against Bongbong Marcos. But as we know, his current campaign is very controlled. We haven't really seen him talk a lot about what he will do in case he gets elected. And a lot of voters are waiting for this. Because at the end, the base can be also disenchanted, and they might have an empty vessel. And given that the pandemic is hitting the country hard right now, I don't think platitudes and big motherhood statements would be sufficient in mobilizing the base.
Okay, how about the idea that since he is the front runner, no, so there are still events or developments that could pull down his numbers. Do you also see the possibility happening in 2022, similar to what happened, let's say, in 2016? At the start, the front runner was Grace Poe. Then she ended up, I think, number three. Si Marojas naging number two, second to Rodrigo Duterte. When in fact, it was Marojas who was trailing si Grace Poe. So ibig sabihin yung mga last minute decisions, last minute information that they get, those really are factors in voter decision making on election day?
Well, if the race is tight and if the numbers between the candidates are very near one another, we saw this in 2016, it was really a four-cornered fight until maybe a month or 3 weeks before the elections. And if we really see, for example, that the 2022 presidential race will be the second round between Marcos Jr. and Vice President Lenny Robredo, then we also saw that peaking early is a good thing because it signals strength. But the main challenge is maintaining momentum. The main challenge is continue to energizing the base, because you know what could happen is that if voters think that it's already a done deal, the tapos na yung boxing, they might not even go to the polls. We saw this in certain races, for example, in the United States, some voters did not go out and vote for Hillary Clinton because they thought she would win, because all the surveys indicated that she's ahead. So surveys must not be seen as mirror images of what will likely happen in May 2022. They're snapshots, not, I won't say like crystal clear snapshots, but they give us an idea of what is the current electoral climate. But again, if surveys are the gauge, then maybe we shouldn't have any elections anymore.
Kasi sinabi ng survey kung sino panalo. Okay. Now, how solid really is the support base of Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos? And is it still possible for the other contenders to eat into that support base?
Well, we need to look into not just the current surveys, but also I'd like to think of going back to the vice presidential race between Marcos Jr. and Lenny Robredo. And you saw this, that there's some commonality between the numbers of Senator Marcos Jr. when he was running for vice president and as president. He's strong in NCR. He's strong with, in fact, the ABC class. In a way, we could make an impression, an observation that's the base. But when you say how strong, definitely there would be what we call committed Marcos voters. And you know, if you're the campaign strategist, you're not just looking at them individually as, okay, I got the vote of these committed voters and that's it. You do want to convert them to actual campaigners. And this is what we saw in 2016. I co-conducted a study on Facebook participation and involvement of Filipino voters. And we saw a drastic difference in the behavior of supporters, or what we call fans, of then Mayor Duterte compared to the other presidential candidates, because they go out of their way and campaign for their candidate, even in the official Facebook pages of the other candidates. We did not see that behavior with the other presidential candidates. So I do think while the base is a good indication of mobilizing, you just don't want them to mobilize to vote for you. You may want them to really go out, campaign, and convert other people on your side. So it's not a done deal. As I would say, the campaign evolves, and you do want your base to also be your army of campaigners.
Okay. Again, we understand your position regarding surveys. No? Tama yun. It's just a snapshot of voter sentiment or preference at a particular point in time. Hindi siya yung predictive basically of the outcome of any election. But sige, gamitin natin isa sa mga information that came out of that recent survey. For instance, your second choice. I think this is consistent with other recent surveys that if your top preference, for instance, is Marcos Jr. and hindi siya natuloy, for instance, the leading second choice candidate has always been Isko Moreno. And then the survey na to, nasa dulo si Lenny Robredo, higher only than Calio de Guzman. So this one is not exactly surprising, no? Because let's say if your top preference is Bongbong Marcos, hindi ka naman tatalon to vote for Lenny Robredo, di ba?
Right. This indicates the polarizing element of the presidential campaign so far, that Marcos voters and Robredo voters see themselves as polar opposites, and therefore they cannot be second choice of each other. And this makes, for example, Mayor Isko Moreno the strongest, let's say, median, and let's say you would say that a secondary choice, a safe choice, because if you're not able to vote for Marcos Jr., you do not want the other side to get the vote. So you would put it in a candidate that you would think will not really win the election. So second choice is really more about preventing what the candidate you don't want to win from winning.
That's interesting. Eh? Basically just to derail the chances of the other candidate.
Well, that's the system that we have, Christian, because you only need a plurality. So if you can deprive votes for another candidate, then that's what you do. We don't have a majority system where you need 50% plus one. You only need to have the most number of votes. So if you're able to be able to shave some of the votes from the other candidate, then surely you would not indicate that person as your second choice.
Okay, speaking of Marcos Jr., there are those who are saying the last time we heard about him until now, before the current electoral season, was when he lost in 2016, right? And then he was seen few and far between 2016 and 2022. But even then, I don't think he ranked as high in the surveys before 2016 than he is doing now. Although that might be apples and oranges, the comparison of apples and oranges, because he ran for vice president then and now he's running for president. But even then, the popularity is enduring. And in fact, it can be argued that perhaps he's even more popular now. How do you explain that? There was a lull between 2016 and 2022. And then when he went back, when he got resurrected in the public on the public stage, para mas naging popular pa. How do you explain that?
Dalawa yung nakikita ko dito, Christian. No? Unang-una, wala siyang ginawang na kahit anong aksyon o nabalitaan natin sa media na makakasira sa kanyang supposedly presidential bid from 2016 until 2022. Ang alam lang natin, nag-file siya ng electoral protest. That's it. No? So it's really more that he did not do anything to damage his whatever it is that he already is seen or is perceived by the voting public, particularly his base. Because I mean, the other alternative is to run for 2016, which did not happen as a senator, which did not happen. Pero pinatakbo niya yung kapatid niya. Kasi nga may electoral protest. No? But the second, I think, which is mas mahalaga, no? Yung pangalawa, is the political environment that became conducive to the viability of a Marcos presidential bid. At itong environment na to is the erosion of our democratic institutions, the assault on liberal democratic institutions and actors in Philippine politics, kasama na dyan ang media, by the government. And sad to say, even if right now President Duterte is denying it, President Duterte is a factor that has fostered the viability of a Marcos presidency.
But why would the public sentiment swing automatically toward the direction of a Marcos?
Well, I think that there are certain factors. One is the supposed solid alliance between Marcos and Marcos Jr. and Sara Duterte. So as I've said before, this somehow made Marcos really viable to the Duterte brand. So what you have right now is not a pure effect of the Marcos political brand. So may merong derived or may residual effect yung Duterte branding, given that they are really seen as a solid alliance with Sara Duterte, despite the comments or the opinions of President Duterte, the father, with regard to Senator Marcos Jr. Yeah. And second, I think because, as I've said, this seems to be a second round of the vice presidential contest between Marcos Jr. and Vice President Lenny. Somehow, the dynamic of that, we would say a bitter rivalry or bitter contest, is being exported to this electoral cycle.
Because I'd like to put that in the context of conventional realities in Philippine politics, that once you lose, let's say, in a high-profile election and nothing was heard from you, basically, over the next 3 or 6 years, basically your political career is dead, diba? Or has reached a dead end. But this one is very different, no?
Right. Well, because this candidate, Marcos Jr., had his family rule the Philippines for decades. He's not simply a losing vice presidential candidate. He was a loser vice presidential candidate that was able to cultivate a solid base and was able to maintain it. And we all know mobilized social media and kept the fire burning. Even he lost the vice presidential race, and definitely the Marcos dynasty has been a permanent fixture of Philippine politics. So I would say that what you said might apply to other candidates, but not necessarily on this one.
Okay, Professor Aris Arugay, thank you very much for joining us tonight on the program, sir.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Christian.
Good evening to you. So that's it for tonight. This has been your host, Christian Esguera. You can watch this episode again on iWantTFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. For recaps and other exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel and catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again tomorrow after the fact.